Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to Wireless, a series all about radio broadcast on the first Monday of every month on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be here with you for the next hour. We're a week later than normal this month because Flirt FM has been off the air for the Christmas holidays, but we're back with a bang and raring to go for 2017. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital broadcasting, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate and alternative radio, podcasting, radio ownership and diversity, and radio's future and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on this edition of Wireless. National Radio. Radio historian Eddie Bowen tells us about the development of legal independent radio in Ireland since 1989, including the ill-fated Century Radio. We profile the new Galway Irish language station Radio na Dráb. From Barcelona, we hear the story of one of the city's long-standing pirate stations, Contrabanda FM, and as Norway switches off FM, US radio academic John Anderson discusses the challenges facing digital radio formats.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
But first to Radio Retro, which delves each month into the archives to unearth a gem from radio history. Last month we heard about RTE's jamming of the Dublin pirate station of the 1980s Radio Nova. The golden era of the pirates came to an end just over 28 years ago on the 31st of December 1988, when the new Independent Radio and Television Act came into force. The Act set out a framework for the legalisation of independent radio and threatened any pirates who contravened the new law with severe fines or imprisonment. With the exception of a small number of renegade broadcasters, up to 100 radio stations around the country closed down that weekend in compliance with the legislation. In this month's Radio Retro, we feature two short clips from two of those stations. The first is from Kiss FM in Monaghan, which beamed its powerful signal into the north and cleaned up on advertising revenue there. The second is from the Dublin station Heartbeat, which broadcast love songs.
From Saturday, the 31st of December 1988, your favourite radio station, 103.7 Kiss FM, will have a brand new sound. Until then, Kiss FM will continue to play Ulster's best music 24 hours per day.
FM 103.7 is stereo. We are Kiss FM, Monaghan Town.
This is Kiss 103.7, keeping you company over the holiday season. I'm Susan Charles, and this afternoon, or this evening, as I said, I'm not sure what time this is going out over the air, we're talking to Miles Johnson, who is the engineer.
Heartbeat, 95 FM, in stereo.
The heartbeat of Dublin City.
It's the final countdown.
We regret that from December 31st, Heartbeat FM cannot bring you a radio service. Dublin's only love song station will cease broadcasting, as ordered by the 1988 Wireless Telegraphy Act. The final countdown is on.
Heartbeat, 95 FM, in stereo.
The heartbeat of Dublin City.
Two examples of the close downs of Irish pirate radio stations on the 31st of December 1988, courtesy of dxarchive.com. If you'd like to send us an archive recording for Radio Retro, feel free to get in touch through social media or on our blog wirelessflirt.wordpress.com.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
After decades of broken promises by successive governments, the 1988 legislation finally heralded the development of legal, independent radio in Ireland. The country's first legal local station, Capital Radio in Dublin, began broadcasting in July 1989, and that was followed in September by the ill-fated national station, Century Radio, which failed after only 2 years. Community radio wasn't licensed until the mid-1990s, once the commercial stations had bedded down. Over the past 28 years, some stations have come and gone, but the majority remain on air, and many are highly successful in their own areas. Broadcast historian Eddie Bowen specialises in radio and is writing a book on 100 years of the medium in Ireland. I spoke to him recently about the development of the sector since 1989 and the challenges facing independent radio today.
UC came in basically to fill the void. Whether they filled the void or not is another question. They were to fill the void being left by the pirates, who were hugely successful. And Radio Nova had a 44% share of the listeners in Dublin, and as a pirate radio station, that was massive. They were to fill a void. The licensing process itself, perhaps we can look back at now, has been slightly flawed. Century Radio got the national license. Again, if you ever want to read a really good piece about Century Radio, read the Flood Tribunal report. You had the Dublin stations. It was seen as a license to print money. Unlike years earlier, where perhaps the pirates wouldn't have been allowed back in, a lot of the pirates who had been established got licensed around the country, the likes of Paul Claffey and that, who would have been lost to radio. And even in Dublin, like these radio stations set up, the likes of Capital Radio, now FM 104 and 98 FM, and even down the country, you already had people trained. They didn't have to spend money on training. These people had trained on the radio. They took the cream of the crop. And they set up Century for the national station, didn't last, replaced them by Radio Ireland and what is today, Today FM. But likes of Capital Radio and FM 104 are still there. In most of the stations that were given licences, bar one or two in 1989, are still there. Nothing has changed.
But there was a gap then before they licensed community broadcasters, and I know this was a cause of disappointment for people like Near FM today and the people who had been involved in BLB and Bray and so on. There was a hiatus there.
Well, once legal radio was established in Ireland, both independent as in national and local, the problem was then there was a bit of a gap between the community stations looking to serve the community. And this had gone back to, we'll say, in the 1970s when Radio Éireann or RTE set up the mobile service, and they were going around the country and broadcasting for 2 weeks in, you know, Longford or Ballina, or you could have community radio Yall, or, you know, smallest towns got a radio station, and they got a feel for it, and people got a feel for it in the town. And suddenly, once RTE had left, a pirate radio would blossom. So there was a need for community radio. What initially the IRTC did was they licensed temporary stations, a temporary license. Basically, they were trying to protect the brand more than anything else. So a station could only set up for 2 weeks. They used the same frequency to move it around the country. Now, there was a few other attempts in the pirate area. There was Community Broadcasting Cooperative in Dublin, who ran Radio Snowflake, which would have been a predecessor of Christmas FM. But community radio was needed because there was demand in the communities. It was demand for a avenue for voice, you know, especially for local issues, because then these, even though FM 104 is a Dublin station, it still has a national feel to it. Newstalk is a national station, and most of the Dublin stations feel national rather than community orientated. And there was a huge need for the voice of the local community to be heard, the ordinary citizen who has no experience to go out there and to learn, and for some of the younger people to go out and get some experience of what radio is and what the medium and the impact that radio has in the community. And still today, like, it's 85% of all Irish adults listen to radio every day of every week. I mean, that's a massive statistic, and no other medium, not even newspapers, not television, not even the internet, can get close to that.
So what's your view then of the broadcasting landscape today? Some people, a critic might say that it's very bland, it's very homogenised, it's very formatted. You know, are there major flaws in the licensing policy that have left us with a very bland offering and some marginalised and weaker community stations? Or
it's stagnated. It has certainly stagnated since probably 2000. The only thing really that has changed on the broadcasting landscape is the change in ownerships. There is no real change because there's no need to change as far as the stations are concerned, but it's changed slightly. You can see money is talking. So stations who would have 10 DJs doing 2 hours now have 6 DJs doing 3 hours. So it's all, you know, it's, we're going to save money here, we're going to save money there. But it has, the broadcasting landscape, neither in radio nor television, has changed much. Perhaps television slightly more than radio. But then radio is still successful. And as long as it stays successful, as long as the JNLR figures come in, that 85% of all Irish adults are tuning in, and the BAI isn't going to change it, and not change it soon. You have internet broadcasting now if you want to, you have DAB, but still most people listen to the radio either sitting in their cars in traffic, or when they're jogging, or when they're cycling, or when they're walking. It's the headphones in, it's on your radio. I mean, we're lucky in this country that we can put in a set of headphones and listen to FM radio on your phone. In America, you can't do that.
And, you know, despite the JNLR figures, a lot of people would say that maybe among a younger generation that radio is finished or really has peaked or is not so popular anymore. Do you believe that? Or
No. Radio is always there. Radio is a medium for... It's not an educational medium anymore. It's a comfort medium. It's people listen to it for comfort. You might listen to the radio, you might listen to Dublin City FM to get the traffic. You might listen to News Talk to get the headlines. You might listen to FM 104 because they're doing a huge prize giveaway. It's not going to change anytime soon. You have internet radio, you can, whatever your choice is, you can listen to. Personally now, I'm not advocating, I listen to internet radio at night. I love it, all-time radio, golden age of radio. I listen to TuneIn, and I listen to a station called Antioch in America, which broadcast the old radio shows, like The Shadow and Gunsmoke and all that. And I just think that's... I feel sad sometimes when I listen to what we listen to today and what radio was 40 years ago. That's when it's become very bland. That's when you turn over from Q102 to Nova to FM 104 and you hear the same song. And you probably hear more or less the same voice. You hear the same giveaway and it becomes very monotonous. That probably will tell more than anything else, but we still listen to radio. Loads of people listen to RTE for the sports on a Sunday. You still listen to... I mean, there's so much choice out there now. The problem is whether it's financially sustainable. The problem is if big business comes in and completely dominates radio simply as a money-making machine, therefore the listener isn't getting value for money. And that's where eventually radio will have its day of doom if especially the management within radio stations don't believe that the listeners still want to listen. They're not just putting it on the air. It's not if you build it, they will come. You have to make them engaged. And I mean, community radio does that. You're engaged in community radio. You listen to Near FM, you listen to the shows, and the diversity, like Dublin City FM, the diversity of the shows. You may know nothing about African music, but you can hear it and you listen to it and you're hooked and you're going, wow, you know, this is why I listen to radio.
Is diversity and ownership, though, the biggest threat perhaps to all of this? Because there's a real question to be asked about that in Ireland now, isn't there?
There's a question to be asked, but it's like eventually whoever can afford it. It's as simple as that. You know, the price is too high for the ordinary. Now what do you do? Because somebody wants to own it, do you close it? No, you don't. Unfortunately, it's I'd say... I remember a discussion in a radio station in Dublin just before the close down in 1988. I remember a discussion with a number of DJs at the time, and we said we didn't think it would take this long. We actually thought it would come quicker, that there would be three or four big owners across the country and that would be it. There'd be nobody else, because they simply would be just gobbled up as soon as big business sees. It's the same with any product. As soon as big business sees it, they will seize it, just to stop them competing with themselves. Competition Authority doesn't seem to have a problem with it. The listenership obviously don't seem to have a problem with it. But if it continues this way, the problem is eventually, going back to the 30s and going back to the 80s, pirate radio will re-emerge. I mean, there is still pirate radio today. I was at a launch of a plaque there recently, commemorating the 1916 radio broadcast in O'Connell Street, and the head of the Independent Broadcasters was there, and he commented to the minister that there was still a problem in pirate radio in 1916. There is still pirate radio today, and they're catering for a different clientele, which no station is catering for. So I mean,
dance music,
house, garage. I mean, they're not there. No radio station's going to play that because they're not going to get the listeners enough to pay the advertiser. It's all about advertising. So, I mean, there's the niche markets for the likes of dance. Would you legalise them? Well, you look at the evidence of Phantom being legalised, it kind of just lost itself. You know, the dance stations are there, and I have the impression from some of them that are around that long, that if they don't interfere with other broadcasters and they stay on the right frequency, and you know, when a temporary station is come on air, they get told to go off, and they go off, and they wait till they go on, and they go back on. And nobody's saying a boo.
So, is there any room for niche broadcasting in this landscape of commercial on the one hand and community on the other? Where does that leave niche broadcasting like Phantom and TXFM, for instance?
You see, with the likes of a pirate broadcaster, we say broadcasting dance music. Yeah, I'm not going to name any of them in Dublin, but there are a number in Dublin. They're broadcasting dance music. They're broadcasting a couple of local advertising for probably promoting their own dance events to try and pay for the electricity. As long as they're only doing that. But the problem is, if you legalise them, you have a whole set of new bills to pay. And they have no intention of paying those bills. They can't afford to pay those bills. And there isn't enough of the advertising pot cake to pay those bills. Community stations are in a different category altogether. But the problem I see with community stations, and some of them, is, again, a lot of them have been there a long time. There isn't enough change. You know, these stations should be given a remit of 5 years. This is my opinion now. 5 years. And then it's changed. Let somebody else do it for 5 years. It's community radio. It's not, it shouldn't be, I'm here in 1990, I'm going to be there in 2020.
So you couldn't get a second license, essentially?
No, yeah. I think it should be changed. Now you can, you know, it should be completely changed. If somebody else should be given the chance. Now I know the board's changed and all that, but it doesn't change enough. And you find, again, if you listen to some of the, not all of them now, but if you listen to some of the community stations, they are very repetitive. There's one or two of them. One I have to highlight, and I think is really, really good, and it should be a model for it. It's Dundalk FM.
Really?
Really, really good, and I'm really impressed by them, and really impressed by the way they go into the community. I'm really impressed by how they tell their story, you know, which it's their story, you know, and the stories that go out there, and the programmes that they do. Coming to Cork ones, really good. You know, Flirt, really good. Near Dublin City, probably I would prefer more near, but I think there should be some kind of allowing of or relaxing of the rules regarding advertising money coming in. I think there should be some relaxing, perhaps going back to maybe the sponsor program. So it's sponsored by at the top of the show and the bottom of the show, and that's it. You know, every 15-20 minutes, but not like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes advertising every hour, but just enough to sustain a station, to allow it to create the programmes within the community. Radio doesn't come cheap. You know, I know technology has made it cheaper, but still, radio isn't cheap, and it needs to be. It needs, these stations need to pay for themselves, and you can't always rely on the generosity of the local community. It's not there anymore, unfortunately. You know, times are tight. I mean, it's remarkable that even when times were tight, radio's blossomed. As much as this country suffered during the death of the Celtic Tiger, what blossomed? What advertising did you see go up? Radio. Radio advertising went up. No Celtic Tiger in radio. That's why all the big boys were in radio. But again, I think it should be relaxed for community radio. It's just, I think because the landscape has become very stagnant, it needs to change. The problem is there's no willingness to change it. There was no willingness to change it in the 1980s till the pirates came along. There was no willingness in the 1930s till pirates came along, or till the likes of Radio Luxembourg and the changing in Radio Caroline. There was no willingness on any part of any authority to change anything until they're put under pressure. And I think that's a problem with the legislation and the way the setup is at the moment. There is no pressure on. It's just going along. Leave it alone. Someone comes in and buys a station. Leave it alone.
Do you have any views about the future of formats in terms of AM or DRM or?
No, I never want to see the end of FM. FM is probably the channel. I mean, they talked years ago about DAB would be replacing everything, and they closed AM. And yeah, I don't know. FM, I think, will, as long as car radios are still, unless car radio is completely a satellite, then things might change. But at the moment, as long as you buy a car and it's got an FM radio in the car, FM radio.
Radio historian Eddie Bowen discussing independent radio in Ireland since the legalisation of the sector in 1989. You're listening to Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3, coming to you live from Galway. Galway has a new Irish language radio station, Radio na Dreabh, which means Radio of the Tribes, named after the city of the tribes. Radio na Dreabh has been broadcasting live online for 2 hours each evening since November and intends to apply for a temporary FM licence in 2017. The station is housed in the headquarters of the Irish language organisation Conradh na Gaeilge in Dominic Street in Galway City Centre and counts on the support of a growing number of volunteers. I met Emily Carruil, founder of Radio na Dreabh and station manager, and asked her about the background to the project.
I suppose I moved to Galway back in February. And I'd always been involved in different radio stations, and my job here is community development for the Irish language, and I just felt it was perfect opportunity to create that community and to build on it, using experience that I had before, and as well because it was we've now got bilingual status in the city. I thought it was important that maybe there would be a platform for Irish language broadcasters, new and something different maybe as well.
And obviously the example exists in Dublin then of Radio na Liffey, and in Belfast of Radio Fáilte. We spoke to some of the Radio Fáilte people on this programme a few months ago. So to what extent have those projects inspired you, or to what extent have you used those projects as a basis for the development of Radio na Dreabh?
Well, I was involved in Radio na Liffey myself. It was my first experience of radio, and I was quite new to, I was learning Irish at the same time, and I felt that as a community and as a group they were very welcoming, and then what they were doing, I mean the project itself is brilliant, and that definitely inspired this, and so they've been very good. They've been working alongside us and they've given us direction and help anytime we've needed it. Radio Fáilte as well, obviously, I'm working alongside them too. I just really admire the work that they've put together and the communities they've built. So they definitely were an inspiration for this.
And tell us more about that community building then. How important an aspect is that in a radio station like this, do you think?
For this in particular, it's maybe the most important thing, and it works on a few different levels as well, because you're not just building a community of listeners providing something for them, but you're also building a physical community, which I think was important to get our own studio space, somewhere that people can come together, because that definitely, it'll improve the quality of what we're doing, and it'll attract more people. And yeah, it was definitely kind of the main idea or the main concept when I was putting it together. Yeah.
Obviously, I'm involved in Radio na Dreabh myself, I have to declare that. But what other kind of people are involved in the station, and what exactly are they doing?
We have all sorts at the moment. We've had everything from a bilingual show, there's a girl on Erasmus from Scotland, and so we had a bilingual Gaelic and an Irish show that was really interesting. We have a few students, we have a few maybe older people, we have different musicians who have come in, we have a few starting up now in January, so we'll have, say, a jazz musician doing one show, we have a broadcaster and filmmaker doing another, and it's interesting to see the different approaches. We also have a translator doing a programme, and she's kind of live translating interviews in different languages, which is really interesting. You kind of attract different people that maybe didn't have their own platform before, but that together make a really interesting station.
And what format is the station broadcasting in at the moment then, and what's the plans for the development of that?
At the moment we are broadcasting 2 hours a day, weekdays, online at rnat.airtime.pro, which is a really handy piece of software, got us up and running. We'll be applying for a licence in the new year for 30 days FM broadcasting as well. So we're looking forward to that, and it's a good challenge, and I think it's nice to have something to work towards as well. And so we'll be building on that 2 hours now in the new year. We have that schedule full, so hopefully we'll be able to maybe add an extra hour here and there and draw new people in.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the philosophy then behind Radio na Dreabh, some of the aims around community development you've discussed already, but obviously there's the promotion of Irish itself in the city?
Yeah, I suppose the people have come to us maybe and asked to do English shows or French shows and German shows. It's interesting. But I suppose those kind of programmes already have platforms. There are community stations in Galway already, and yeah, I think it's important to have something that is exclusive to the Irish language and for that community, because it's definitely here. And you see that even when you're organising events, there'll be a new face every now and then. You kind of wonder, well, where are these people? But I mean, because radio is such a non-committal thing, you can build a community of listeners who maybe, you know, just have a shared interest. And it's also giving a platform to businesses now who are working through Irish, so they can kind of broadcast or get their message out, and to people who maybe have niche interests as well. So, yeah, it's a very kind of varied group, even though it is very niche as well. But I thought it was important to have a platform for the Irish language that isn't maybe the same. I know there is Raidió na Gaeilge, so of course, but it's different when it's a community station. You get different voices, you get a different outlook, and maybe it reflects a very specific community as opposed to trying to, I suppose, they're broadcasting for the country as opposed to for a specific place or space.
So the question of the local nature of the station, I suppose, is really at the heart of what Raidió na Dráib is about then, is it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And, I mean, their programmes say that they kind of look specifically at, say, the buskers in Galway, or the different different nationalities that have all gathered here in Galway, or just I suppose it reflects a different life here, because, I mean, it is quite unique as a place. And so, yeah, I think it's important, and it's lovely just to have something that shows that and reflects that and brings those groups together as well.
And what kind of response has there been so far? Obviously, it's only online so far, so there is live streaming 2 hours a day, as you say, but also podcasts.
Yeah, it's been really good from both, say, people trying to get involved and people listening. It's been a lot bigger and growing a lot faster than we expected, if I'm honest. So we have maybe 12 to 14 people broadcasting each week, and you have on average maybe 8 to 16 people listening to the live streams. But then actually the podcasts have been far more popular, maybe because of the time, or I don't know, we can play around with that a bit. But yeah, some of the podcasts have reached maybe 400 to 300 people, which is brilliant. And over the last few months, there's a few that have been online, say, for longer. And I mean, I don't even know when the kind of spikes have happened, but I mean, you look at it now and they say 600 people have listened to one or two of them, and we weren't expecting that kind of audience. So I mean, it definitely is something that people are looking for, and I suppose because it's online too, we have the option of broadcasting to a wider audience. We can track people listening, say, from Chicago or from London or wherever else. So that's interesting to see as well.
And do you think, is online the future of radio then? This is a more philosophical question, I suppose, or is there still a role for FM in radio as well?
I think there's definitely still a role for FM, and it is the main thing. I mean, a lot of people say, well, where can I tune in? When you say online, they go, oh, I wouldn't sit down for the hour to do it. And I suppose there is that. I mean, you can throw on the FM in the car, in the kitchen, whereas you probably wouldn't do that with a laptop. So, I mean, yeah, I think podcasts definitely have gathered a lot of attention recently, and there's a lot more loyalty to them at the moment. But at the same time, I don't think they'll replace FM, and I don't think online radio will either.
And the 30-day licence is the next phase, and obviously that'll be a pilot endeavour. So after that, then, what are the plans for Raidió na Dráib?
We hope to get the funding to employ someone to develop the station properly, because at the moment everyone's working voluntary basis, and while that community is great, I mean, it will take someone to shape that and to bring it forward if we really want to be serious about it. And I definitely think that the potential is there. So we'd hope to maybe aim for, like what Raidió na Fáilte and Raidió na Lifa have done, that we could develop the headquarters, develop the community who are involved in it, and develop a proper schedule, so maybe 6 to 8 hours a day in the next few years.
Emily Yarúil, founder and manager of Galway's new independent Irish language radio station, Raidió na Dráib. And as I said during the interview, I'm involved myself, and it's a very exciting project, and we hope to be on FM later this year. You can find out more about the station and listen to the live on-air shows at rnat.airtime.pro.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Welcome back to Wireless on Flirt FM. Earlier in the show, we heard Eddie Bowen talk about the longevity of pirate radio in Ireland, even almost 30 years after the legalisation of independent radio. The pirates will always be with us, it seems, both in Ireland and elsewhere. Spain has a long tradition of pirate broadcasters, and several continue to broadcast in different parts of the country, preferring to call themselves free radio stations. I spent some time in Barcelona recently and came across the highly original and exciting Contrabanda FM, one of the city's 5 free radio stations.
Bienvenida a ¿Qué pasa en el mundo? Aquí en las ondas libres de Contrabanda FM, en el 91.4 del dial de Barcelona y alrededores, y a través de internet en www.contrabanda.org.
The opening of ¿Qué pasa en el mundo? Or What's Happening in the World, an international current affairs programme focusing on issues of justice and equality. Contrabanda has been on the air since 1991, is based on a cooperative structure with members paying dues, and receives no state subvention. I met Javier Leguido, one of the members of Contrabanda, and first asked him to tell me about the background to the station.
First of all, thank you for being here in Barcelona. Contrabanda FM, it's a free radio, as we used to say here in the terminology in Spain, meaning that is a radio which is broadcasting without a legal license. It doesn't mean, we can discuss this later on if you want, that is illegal. We can say it's not legal. And it's a radio that next January will become 26 years old, and is a radio broadcasting from the center of Barcelona. And the content of the radio depends obviously on different programs. Some of them are attached or linked to a person or a group of persons. And I will say it comes from music, for instance, Escarlata O'Hara, which is a program focused on reggae ska music. Some of them are in other languages. For instance, Niemensland is treating the German news and actuality, and it's broadcast in German. Cibaldone is in Italian, and some of them are in Spanish. So we are summarizing a radio that is broadcasting whatever we want, because we are free and we are very proud of it.
And also you have a lot of Catalan, of course, also on the radio.
Yeah, actually I cannot remember, because we here in Catalonia are mixing all the way Spanish and Catalonian. So there's no program, as far as I know, currently and in the past years, focused on Catalonian and the Catalan culture. But in transmitting information and somehow the program itself is being broadcasting in the language of the person who speaks. And usually, I will say 20% of the time, or it depends on the program, is mixing constantly Spanish and Catalonian, yes.
Okay. And is Catalan important, and is the Catalan question important for the station, the question of independence and the question of the identity of Catalan people? Is that an important part of what the station is about?
As far as I know, because I'm part of this project just 3-4 years ago, as far as I know, in the origins of the radio, this was an important thing. I cannot tell you something else, because I'm not I don't have the information, but currently there was a discussion between different radios, because there's a manifesto coming from the 80s about the free radios in Spain. Okay, it's a manifesto, and more or less it contains the definition of what we understand that it's a free radio. Okay. So the idea was the year before, something like that, to discuss between ourselves if as a group, as a radio, we have kind of ideology or a kind of political message and position in different subjects. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as you already know, this is one important issue here nowadays, but the general opinion was that apart from doing radio and to not wanting to depend on public money and advertising and things like that, to be real free, apart from that, from 3-4 clear ideas, I will say we have not a clear political position.
So you're not a pro-independence radio station then, officially not pro-independence?
No, definitely we are not a pro-independent radio.
Okay, so can you tell me about how has it happened that Contrabanda has survived for so long without a license? Have you been under pressure from the authorities to close down, for instance?
As far as I know, the main problem is to keep an horizontal and assembly project alive is very hard, always is very hard, and requires a constant rotation between persons. Why? Because all the people involved in the project are using their free time to broadcast programs, but not to broadcast programs, because there's a lot, a massive amount of work to be done. Cleaning, to keeping the space tidy, to repairing things, to keeping the broadcasting alive. There's a lot of work, definitely. As far as I know, we didn't, at least recently, suffer any pressure, any legal pressure here in Catalonia, because it depends, the main law or the sorry, the political regulation of the radios are related to Catalonia, okay, as a pseudo-independent region or administrative independent region, mm-hmm. right? So, in other parts of Spain, we know and we want to take the opportunity to say it, then the political powers are being pressing to close radios, asking for money or closing the hardware near to broadcast. The only thing that I want to add is that there's a law project to legalize somehow those kinds of groups like us, which are broadcasting, are not earning money with the activity, but we are not, we don't have any license. But at the moment, this is not allowed, it's just a project.
And does Contrabanda want to have a license, or do you want to continue as a free radio, or is it possible to be a free radio with a license?
Yeah, it's very interesting, the question. I will say that having or not having a license, per se, it doesn't define a free radio, in my opinion. It's just a personal opinion. As I said before, in the efforts of, with other radios, to establish a new manifesto, updated, because obviously the reality and the way the radio is working and being consumed nowadays is not the same than 20 or 30 years before. But I will say there are other more important things that define a free radio. For instance, to depend or not of public money, to have people working for a salary. We have in Spain, as far as I know, the only case that I can mention is Radio Clara in Valencia, which have a legal license. They themselves define as a free radio, and if you listen, the contents are very interesting. Probably the only thing, as far as I know, maybe I'm mistaken, I'm wrong, they have a person who is has a salary, because he is dedicating 6-8 years, whatever, per day.
A manager.
Is the person who basically is mm-hmm. producing the content. Is the voice that you will hear probably mm-hmm. if you listen. I would recommend to listen this radio, Radio Clara, because it's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Because Radio Clara has a license, does it have to prevent itself or stop itself from saying certain things? Is it really free if it has a license? Does the license constrain the radio in some way?
I will say, because I'm very, very, I'm very used to listen to their programs, I will say not at all. Mm-hmm. To having a license, at least the contents that I hear, it doesn't mean that they have any limit or any constraint in terms of expressing themselves. They are very critical with the town hall, they are very critical with the political, and the contents are very subversive. They give voice to anarchists and trade unions that are facing the power. And I will say no, but what I cannot say, maybe you should contact them and ask, is which legal aspects requires a license. I have no idea if they require a person or they have to deposit money. I have no idea. Maybe this is an issue, but hearing or listening their content, I would say no, definitely no.
Can you tell me a little bit about the other free radios in Barcelona? You said earlier that you think there's four at the moment. So are there differences between these stations, or are they broadcasting in different areas of the city, or what is the situation like?
Yeah, the situation nowadays in Barcelona is there are a few free radios here in Barcelona. Contrabanda is we are one of them. There's another one called Radio Resaca. There's another one called Radio Bronca, and the final one that I know is Radio Línea 4. Those four stations more or less works in a similar way. They have a physical studio like us. They are broadcasting in FM, as far as I know, and internet as well. They are free because they are working more or less in a horizontal and a free way like us. The content's exactly the same. Radio Pica is another one. It's a very old station as us.
Mm-hmm. I find it very interesting that these stations have survived for so long, and that there hasn't been an attempt, or that the authorities have not succeeded in closing the stations. So obviously there's some sort of a legal situation which is maybe quite loose or quite fluid and allows you to continue broadcasting down the years.
I'm surprised as well, because it's always hard to be free and to keep speaking and to keep giving voices to the people or initiatives that usually are not don't has access to mass media. It's hard for me to find a common or a reason that explains those 20, 30 years, more or less. It's the common accepted history of the free radios in Spain. This is the situation in Barcelona, but in Madrid you will see the same, more or less the same situations with different neighborhoods, different initiatives, and all of them starting at 80s of the past century, and with a quite good health, because as I said before, to keep alive an horizontal project is always hard.
Mm-hmm. And has Contrabanda attempted to apply for a license in the past, or have you made an application for a license ever, for a community radio license?
As far as I know, no, because I will say probably it requires a project, it requires a lot of requirements of hardware, of I don't know. It's a massive amount of bureaucracy that you need. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, at the end, you should ask yourself why I need a license. If I can do what I need to do, if I'm free to say whatever I want to say, probably the license, it doesn't by itself guarantees that the radio will survive.
Mm-hmm. And what are the plans for the future of Contrabanda, or are there clear plans? It's obviously a very fluid project, going from day to day. So,
and at some point we should find a more stable place to be, because the place where we are downtown here in Barcelona, it's fine. It has a lot of emotions are here, because we are some years here, but at some point we need a more stable place. And we are trying different things. We are speaking with different people and groups with affinity to our ideas or to the way we work.
Political groups.
Yeah, this. I prefer not to mention, because there's a project, and as you can think, the projects can be a reality or not. But definitely this is one of the main thing that we need to resolve, because in the other hand, it's consuming a lot of energy for us to keep in these tasks that are needed to broadcast radio and are not part of the radio. This is one of the things. The second thing is, I will say, to keep the FM or not, in my opinion, yes, we need to keep broadcasting in FM, but we cannot be blind to the reality. We are obviously receiving more and more proposals of people, so this is something that will never change. The people need to express ideas, projects, and people want to consume those ideas, those projects, those histories. But the radio, as is being in the last century, probably I'm not sure if it will keep the same with a studio or record. Well, you know, podcasts and broadcasting and internet are a reality and probably are not exclusive. You can keep broadcasting in FM and radio. And probably there's a work to be done to define more what is a free radio and to work in coordination with other radios. The thing is, as I said before, it's hard to keep your own project alive, but we definitely need to cooperate more with other radios. In Barcelona, we had something called Coordinadora de Radios Lliures, so Free Radios Coordinator, which has a massive and impressive work in general strikes in the past, and I will say was the main source of information in this journey. But since the other collectives and groups are in the same situation like us, it's hard to keep this coordinated and alive.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say anything else about the radio? Have I missed any point that you would like to make, or would you like to emphasize anything?
Well, the only thing is to thanks again for your opportunity and to invite everybody to listen to the radio. If somebody is who is planning to arrive to here to Barcelona, can address to Contrabanda, but to Radio Pica, Radio Bronca, to other free radios. And the idea is to keep the idea alive, because it's more necessary as before. See, yes, probably something I want to mention. There's a important change in our law, in Spanish law, that makes everybody every time more difficult to express. It was called Ley Mordaza. You probably will yes. Translate to better what is a mordaza, but it's something that you put in the mouth to avoid people to freely express. And definitely this is a threat to the freedom of expression. But we need to keep the free radios as alive as possible.
Javier Leguido of Free Radio Contrabanda FM in Barcelona, and you can listen to the station at contrabanda.org.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Welcome back to Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3, and we're joined in studio by John Anderson, who's Assistant Professor and Director of Journalism and Media Studies in Brooklyn College, which is part of the City University of New York. And you're very welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me.
And I wanted to ask you about the question of digital radio and digital formats, because you've written some material about the very questionable success, or indeed the failure, of DAB, which has been rolled out in many countries in the world, and indeed the confusion over competing formats, with three different formats in operation and no clarity about what the future development path will be in these formats. Can you tell us a little bit about that issue and why you think it's important?
Well, one of the things that, the digitization of all broadcasting, both radio and television, was done on, the premise that it was done on, was kind of a specious one. All media is going digital. Everything will be ones and zeros. It's a converging of platforms. Therefore, even though we have existing analog services that work very well, we still have to digitize. But people started to develop technologies without thinking about what the end goal or the end use would be. And in the context of specifically DAB, it was originally done as kind of a collaborative effort between various engineering and science groups, primarily in France and Germany. And they created an open standard called DAB. But the problem was that the various member countries that helped to develop the technology did not actually coordinate on developing the implementation strategy. So what you had was a technology that ostensibly allowed more stations to broadcast through a consolidated transmission infrastructure, but in some countries they placed it on one frequency band, and on another country they placed it in another frequency band, and one regulatory body only allowed multiplexes to be built in certain limited areas, while another country privatized their multiplex infrastructure. And so there was no continental or cross-country coherency, and that kind of defeated the purpose of having a seamless digital broadcast system. At the same time, no one was investing in the programming concept. So what you often found in the initial iterations of DAB were basically digital equivalents, or just simulcasting of existing analog programming. So there was no impetus on the part of the listener or the consumer to go out and buy these new radios to take advantage of this supposedly wonderful new digital media environment. And this all started, you know, in 1985, so we're 30 years on, and since then there have been multiple developments and upgrades to DAB technology, like you have DAB Plus now.
Yeah.
But they're not cross-compatible. Mm-hmm. So, for example, like in the UK, where they started building a DAB network, if they wanted to use DAB+, they would have to build out a completely new transmission infrastructure. And then there's the question of cross-compatible radios. So in many ways, you saw this atomization of an effort that was supposed to bring some sort of coherency and harmonization to the broadcast environment on kind of a European level that never was really properly executed in the regulatory space.
And of these three formats, HD in the US, DAB in lots of different countries around the world, and then DRM
right.
in places like India, for instance, which,
yep.
which of these is going to succeed, or are they all going to fail? Is it time to go back to the drawing board completely and to invest more in analog broadcasting again, or what's the answer to all of this?
It depends really on where you look. Looking at it from the US context, HD radio is just a mess. It doesn't work properly. It's never worked properly. It was designed in a bad way, and it was basically done so that incumbent broadcasters could seemingly control their future. But because of technological compromises, it actually increases interference between stations, both analog and digital, and doesn't provide any mechanisms of increased quality or diversity of programming. And it's also a proprietary structure. So like Microsoft, if you want to actually put an HD radio transmitter on the air, you have to pay a licensing fee to the technology's proprietor. And if you use additional features, like the ability to multicast multiple channels on a single FM frequency, you pay in perpetuity for that. So there were a lot of things that have hamstrung HD radio, and it really has no play outside of North America. There's a handful of stations in Canada and a handful of stations in Mexico that have adopted HD. But within the United States context, you have maybe 15% of all broadcasters that have actually adopted the technology. So that's in malaise, and I think will probably exist out of dint of inertia and no other alternative. DAB is starting to find purchase in certain countries. For example, in Norway, they actually have good broadcaster penetration. It's still kind of low on receiver penetration, but they're actually talking about shutting down analog FM. I don't think that's going to happen. And then Digital Radio Mondial is kind of an also-ran. It came, you know, 10 or 20 years after DAB and HD did, and a lot of people had already made infrastructure and financial investments in the other technologies. And so while DRM, in my mind, technologically, may be the most useful and extensible of the digital broadcast platforms, it came too late. So many, the DRM consortium now is actually selling the technology as supplementary to DAB or to HD radio.
So would your prediction be then that DAB may survive in some sort of a format, or what do you think would happen?
I think primarily all of the technologies will survive in some sort of format, but the primacy of broadcasting in the context of now what we consider to be radio is fundamentally shifting, and I think will become kind of a subservient position. I mean, when you ask someone, I'm 42, if you ask someone 20 years younger than me, what is radio? They're not going to say Flirt FM or, you know, their DAB multiplex. They're going to say YouTube or Spotify or Pandora or streaming technologies, which in many cases mimic or even simulcast radio broadcasting. But the notion, the public definition of what radio is and is becoming has shifted, and broadcasters have been so involved in navel gazing about picking a technology to transmit over the air that, you know, wireless internet service providers are eating their lunch. And you're seeing this happen, you know, with newspapers going through diminution. You're seeing the same thing with television broadcasting. So I think there is a place for a viable digital technology. And I think that not HD radio, but in DAB and DRM do have elements that could make them useful, but we haven't figured out an industrial structure and a creative structure to utilize them effectively and seamlessly across borders like we should.
And we only have 52%, I think, DAB coverage in Ireland at the moment, with a number of digital stations, but none of the independent broadcasters have invested in it at all. There's been a small investment by RTE. So what would your advice be for digital broadcasters in Ireland?
Dip your toes in the water if you can. Don't make huge investments if you don't necessarily need to. Content is where it's at, and serving your community is always where it's at. Some of the things that radio is still very, very useful for is creating a community connection, creating a sense of intimacy that you don't get from something even like social media, but also keeping in mind that in many cases, radio is the medium of last resort. But in natural disasters, for example, you have infrastructures that go down. 4 years ago when I moved to New York City, 3 months after I moved there, Hurricane Sandy came through and completely wiped out the cellular phone infrastructure. So people were not able to get online and check for news and things like that. But if you had a battery-powered radio, you could stay well-informed. So don't lose the legacy that you have. It is still incredibly valuable. And in a media environment that exists where platforms are proliferating like crazy, radio still has the ability to be a unique medium, and you should concentrate on that uniqueness.
Professor John Anderson of the City University of New York. And since that interview was recorded, it has been announced that Norway will in fact begin the switch off of FM on the 11th of January, with all transmitters to be closed by the end of 2017. The government claims that the changeover will lead to a greater range of radio channels and improved sound quality. It also argues that DAB transmission is 8 times cheaper than FM. However, it's also been reported that 2/3 of Norwegians are opposed to switching off FM, and many are concerned about poor radio reception in their cars. Another high-profile switch off of a much older format took place on New Year's Day. The French public broadcaster France Inter turned off its high-powered transmitter on 162 kHz long wave, a signal that could be received all over Western Europe, including Ireland. An online campaign is attempting to reverse the decision and is supported by those in France whose FM reception is poor and by overseas listeners who relied on long wave, especially in French-speaking parts of Belgium and Switzerland. RTE, of course, plans to switch off its long wave transmitter on 252 kHz sometime this year also. Not everyone is abandoning AM, however. The veteran pirate station Radio Caroline has applied for an AM licence from the UK regulatory body Ofcom. Caroline, which broadcasts on DAB and online and occasionally on AM using Manx Radio's frequency, is seeking a licence to serve Suffolk. And finally, some unexpected AM activity in Ireland. Over the past week, the community station Dublin South FM is being relayed on 1395 kHz medium wave in Dublin. The signal is reportedly strong, so it could be the same transmitter used by the Pirate Energy AM on the same frequency a number of years ago. And that brings us to the end of this month's edition of Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. We'll be back on the first Monday in February with more news from the radio world. I do hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. There's also a blog accompanying the programme, wirelessflirt.wordpress.com. Until the next edition of Wireless, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Tune in to Famous Last Words on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. We'll bring you the latest Indian.